I tip in my house, I keep everything in a north-facing window and east-facing window. And this time of year, that may not be the best because we're not getting all that light. But frankly, with the way my house is, I have no other option but either a north-face or east-face. They're doing fine. If you move something to the south-facing window, that could be fine for the winter months. But I would move it before summer comes along because then that becomes a really intense hot light that may actually burn your plant. And something indirect would be much better. I think what I find more so over light being an issue is humidity in the indoors. When we have our furnaces on, our air is drying out quite a bit. And what people may notice on their house plants during the winter months is a browning or yellowing of the edges of the leaves, the margins. And that, people get all worked up about it. And to me, I've just accepted it as the winter phase of my house plants and not worry about it as much anymore because I know in the summer they'll grow new leaves. What you can do is, if you want to prevent the yellowing of your house plants on the margins during the winter, is run a humidifier. I've been doing that for the last several years now, primarily because of my sinuses, but it's been benefiting my house plants as well, and the margins have stayed fairly reasonable looking throughout the winter. Also, stay on top of your watering. You said you were gone for a couple of weeks and forgot to water. What's my excuse? I haven't gone anywhere and I haven't watered them. But because they're not growing as much, you don't want to overwater them because otherwise they're going to just sit in a puddle and you might develop root rots over the winter.
And I actually said, Herb and I own Stouty, my in-laws, did come over once and do a little watering. And, I also, we had the house temperature set lower. It was, I don't remember, 56 or something, like 57. It never got higher than that. And so I think that probably the cooler probably helped a little bit on the moisture side too.
Yeah, they weren't going to dry out as much because it was cooler. They're also not growing as much at those cooler temperatures. So in your case, you had shortened days, cool temperatures. You're lucky they're alive, Larry.
Well, I've got a cactus that's about 15, 18 feet high now. So I'm going to have to cut that thing back at some point. And I'm not looking forward to it because I'm going to have to use a stepladder
to. I've got one myself that I won't let get above 5 feet tall. And whenever it starts to get too tall, I cut off the head of it and start over at 1 feet and keep growing it over and over. They can take the abuse.
Well, they can. And if you want to join in, again, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. We'll be glad to get you on. In reading the 2007 garden catalogs, we see references to, and this is relating to roses, you see one time, repeat, and continuous blooming roses. Well, one time I get, but repeat and continuous, is there much of a, what are the differences among those? Well, I know between the two, I certainly know what the one is.
Oh, boy. I should have warned you. I am not a rosarian. Every rose I had in my yard has died. There's a lot of options with your roses, and I'm the first to admit what those options are. I have to look up each time. But I will state this. One of the things that we are doing at the gardens is we had a whole collection of the teas and the hybrids and that. We've yanked them out.
You have.
We have yanked them out, and what we are doing is researching now what are the appropriate roses to be growing in Wisconsin because we felt it was inappropriate to be sending a message that we're growing these roses here in the garden, so it's probably okay for you to do it too, when people don't realize the amount of work that went into these roses and actually the difficulty we had with them. So if you were to come visit the Rotary Botanical Gardens this coming year, we'll be putting in a more appropriate rose garden for the individuals looking for a low maintenance rose to grow in our area.
Well, that's good.
So I'm dodging your question. I admit that. But also too, we're addressing this situation because we felt that through the gardens, we were sending a mixed message on what's appropriate to grow here by you seeing it in the gardens. We're coming up with a more homeowner landscape friendly display to better inform the people.
Well, and as I walk around the botanical gardens, either yours or Olbrich Botanical Gardens or Green Bay, those places, you see people walking around with pencil and paper, and they're writing down. They and that's a in a way that's a good thing. So you're probably right. You want to if you want to sort of set an example.
Yeah.
And that's a good way to do it.
Yeah. And that's our landscape manager, Mark Dwyer. He's made that decision a year or so ago, and we've got master gardeners doing research right now on what will be appropriate to go into those spots.
Wow. Wonderful. Tom and Stoddard, we'll give you a chance now. Tom, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Yes, I wanted to mention that I have a lot of house plants, and when I bring them in, I really need the room. And I take my larger cactuses and I put them in the basement. It's quite cool down there, but I don't water them probably once in the middle of the winter, and they don't. They can sit in the absolute dark down there, and they do just fine. They don't even start to turn yellow or get really strange looking.
And then do you take them outside then in the spring, Tom?
I put them out on my porch in about April or May when I think that they won't be frozen out there, and they do just fine.
Yep. Sounds like a good tip to me.
I keep mine on the back porch, south-facing porch, through the summer, and bring it in into an interior room next to the furnace where it's nice and warm. I do keep a grow light in there, but that's for my other plants I'm trying to overwinter. And I water it when I think of it.
That's the way to do it. Tom, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the information. And we'll take some more calls. Again, the number 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. And just now being joined by Rochelle in Port Washington. So let's go there. Rochelle, hi.
I have a question about having mold on the surface of the dirt of my houseplants.
Mm-hmm.
What is that caused from?
Well, the soil in your houseplants is really a soilless mix, or should be, of sphagnum moss, peat, other plant material that's been shredded to be used. It does break down, and what you've done is had some sort of bacteria or fungi come in there to start breaking that down. What you should probably do is try to just repot the plant, put in fresh potting soil, maybe top dress it. You don't want to spray it with anything. You don't want to come in with your Lysol or spray it, because that's going to hurt your plant. You may just want to consider top dressing it to smother it, or repotting it to put in fresh soil, and keep an eye on possible allergens that could be developing in your family because of it.
Okay, what did you say about smothering it?
Well, what we need to do with our houseplants is, when we do our houseplants, get a soilless mix. You don't want to use topsoil in there, because the sand, silt, and clay will make it too heavy and cause issues in the pot. What you'd want to do is just find something that's all a shredded organic material mix, a good potting soil, again, with no soil component, and use that instead. And just add a layer on top of it to smother it out.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Rochelle. Thanks for calling. And let's go to Sharon in Superior. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, how are you today?
Just great. What's the weather like in Superior?
Well, it's not that bad. It's actually close to 20 today. We've had it kind of cold, but it has warmed up some, thank God.
Heat wave.
Yeah.
What can we do for you?
I'm curious about poinsettia plants. You know, a lot of us get them over the holidays, and then they start to wilt.
Yep.
Is it something we should just throw away, or is there a way to save it?
Yes, there are ways to save them, and if you get on the internet, you can find extensive ways to save it. But personally, the one that's starting to look bad on my windowsill is going in the garbage and compost pile really, really soon. I view a lot of our holiday plants as seasonal, disposable plants. To get those to rebloom takes a lot of effort.
Okay.
And it's just something I don't have time to do. And I think once people realize how much work it is, yeah, they may think, oh, it's just easier to get another one next year as a gift, because it'll look better too.
All right.
It involves keeping it in pitch dark for 12 hours.
For several months. Yeah.
And if you make a mistake and open your...
If you peek to see if it's dark in there, you let in enough light where you set it back to square one.
And you have to start all over again.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for calling. It's a very hard... I suppose if somebody wants... Sharon, if you want to try it, and you've got, let's say, a closet that you don't open...
Yep.
Put it, and you want to do it, put it in that closet. Go online, you'll find the directions.
In the months before you want it to bloom, you put it in there for continuous dark for, I believe, about 12 hours. I can't think of how many weeks it must be kept like that. But then you put it in for 12 hours, you take it out for the remainder of the day to get light, then you put it back in there. But with the way the plant's biology works is if during that 12-hour period it gets any light, it'll be reset back and it won't bloom.
It sets back, unfortunately. Thanks for calling.
I like to keep things low maintenance. And to me, trying to get a poinsettia to rebloom is, I don't have the patience for that.
1-800-642-1234 in the Madison area. Reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Of course, as soon as we say that, somebody will probably call and say, oh, I do that all the time, and
well,
it works great.
That's great. It's just you're asking me, and anybody who's been to my lectures know it's like, oh, that's too much work. Don't bother.
All right. Keep it simple. Well, let's go take some more calls here. And I think Brooke in Eau Claire is next, so let's go to Brooke. Hi, Brooke.
Good morning. I just tuned in, and I'm wondering, I hear all kinds of things. What is the best thing you should do when the gardening season's over in the fall? Should you plow it up? Should you leave it sit?
Now, for one thing, is it vegetables or flowers you're thinking?
Mostly flowers.
Mostly flowers. Well, again, with my whole keep it simple principle, I tend to ignore it till the spring. What I do in my ornamental beds is when the flowers die back in the fall, I choose what I want to leave for ornamental for winter interest. I leave my grasses and some of my woody ornamentals so I can view them through the winter. But a lot of my annuals I'll scrape up because they've died back, and I throw them on my compost pile. I don't do any kind of tilling in the flower beds. What I would do is once the ground is frozen and I think of it, I put down about an inch of mulch to help protect the plants. But otherwise, in the fall, I just do basic sanitation. I get rid of the dead and throw it on the compost pile. Then I leave it till I get to the spring. And then about March, I go through and all those things I left for winter interest, I cut those back and tend to those so they can have a fresh growth again in the spring. That's the way I do it. There's everybody can have their own different ways of doing things. Some people will do tilling in the fall for their plants, and that could be fine if you're willing to do it. I would recommend, if you are going to do that, put on some sort of organic material, though, to till it in so it'll be incorporated into your soil. Mm-hmm. And it'll improve your soil that way, too.
And you put, if you till it, do you put a little cover over the top of it or mulch or anything, or just leave it?
I personally would want to mulch. I wouldn't want to leave anything exposed over the winter. I mean, and if you look at the way some ag people do it, they go no-till and leave it that way in the fields.
We don't do any tilling.
I don't either, yeah.
We just leave it. And, you know, Renee does all the work. but it looks great all winter. You know, it's got some nice winter interest. The birds kind of like it, too. Mm-hmm. And then in the spring, that's when everything goes, about the same as you, March or so. There we go. Brenda in Dodgeville, it's your turn. Hi, Brenda.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I run a garden group for some elementary school students here at our school.
Good for you.
Thank you. One of our teachers graciously donated two aquariums that she'd like to see us convert into terrariums.
Mm-hmm.
The kids have chosen to use one of those terrariums for carnivorous plants and the other for succulents.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually have two questions. One is, what sort of preparations should we make to these aquariums to convert them into terrariums? And secondly, what sort of course, there's your typical plants, the cobra plant and the Venus flytrap, but what other plants can you recommend, one, for success, and two, you know, just a variety of plants for both of these aquariums, which will be eventually be terrariums, obviously, and then sources for those.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. First of all, for the preparation of those tanks, I would clean them as if you're getting them ready for fish. You know, use a light soapy water, wash them down, and then rinse them well. And that should take care of any kind of fungal problems you will encounter.
Okay.
Now, for the succulent ones, you're going to want a base of a medial. You want sand for the base of it, essentially, okay? Maybe with a little bit of organic mixture mix put into there to grow the succulents in. They're going to want something very lean and with good drainage to grow. Then you want the opposite for the terrarium with the the carnivorous plants you're wanting to grow. They are almost a bog-like plant, and what you want to look for them is peat moss, sphagnum moss, to use as a base. You might want to put down a bit of a potting soil mix and then put the sphagnum moss on top, and then make sure that stays well misted because they're going to like that moisture and humidity. With that said, I've seen a lot of people start those type of terrariums, and they just naturally have to replace plants because there are some issues with doing that. So just
keep that in mind.
Yeah, keep that in mind. If something's not looking well, just take it out and put in a new one. And the greenhouse I worked in as an undergrad student, that's what we had to do. And you know, here we're at University Greenhouse, we're really working hard to keep it going. As for sources, check your local garden centers. You'd be surprised what they're having for sale for novelty plants indoors, for Venus flytraps, sundew, etc. There can be numerous ones they can have. Things like Garden Expo coming up. I know walking around there, you see all sorts of things for sale that you can put into those terrariums that would go well and be an affordable price too.
Okay.
And as you're looking there, they'll probably provide sources.
Okay.
And Brenda, yeah, I hope you make it to Garden Expo.
Okay. When is it? Because I haven't been looking at my newspaper lately.
Okay. We'll get you the dates for Garden
Expo. February 9th, 10th, and 11th.
That's it.
Good little plug for that.
February 9th, 10th, and 11th. And actually, I'll be there. I didn't have my book out here, but I'll be there with Shelley Ryan, and we'll be doing a little meet and greet and question and answer session. And I think Lisa Johnson will be there helping us out, too. So,
yeah.
But there is so much to see at that Garden Expo.
Yeah, and actually, you'll probably find some people there also specializing in terrariums where you can pick their brains. And there might even be some specialty mixes out there you can use.
Wow, terrific. Well, thank you so much for answering all my questions.
All right, Brenda, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Mike Mattis, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator and a Horticulture Educator at the Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville, Wisconsin. Our guest today, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller with Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Net. Talking with Mike Maddox today on this edition of Garden Talk, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you listening in. Give us a call if you have a question. We have some open lines to get you on pretty fast at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And let's go to David in Madison next. David, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Mike and Larry. Good show, and thank you. And Larry, just a quick digression to plug you for all your good community service. I was answering the phones during one of the drives a number of years ago, and we were able to hook you for the Madison Youth Choirs and auctioned you off. I think you might remember that.
I do remember that.
And that was a lot of fun. We rotate our house plants. They're all green. We've got about a 30-year-old begonia and photos, umbrella plants, mother-in-law's tongue. And we rotate these during the summer months outside and bring them back in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And all winter we feed them high-grade coffee grounds and coffee. And that's basically all we feed them. We just take the leftover French press morning coffee grounds in the evening, add a little water to it from the tap, and feed them. And I was curious if it was the acidity of the coffee. They seem to grow like crazy, and they love it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was curious if it's only certain plants that like that or... Is it really healthy for them? It seems to be healthy for ours.
Well, my first thought is, how would they respond to Colombian versus French? No, okay. Anyways, coffee being acidic itself, what we're probably doing is taking the acidity of the coffee and our naturally limey waters that we get here in Madison. You're probably making something closer to neutral. This is just a guess. Let me clarify that. So what you're probably doing is giving them more neutral water in this process, and that's typically the range that plants like to grow in, is that neutral. Plants can have preferred ranges of pH, alkalinity or acidity, that they like to grow in, but by going to neutral, you'll be probably benefiting them somewhat. I will admit I have on occasion used a cold coffee I found and dumped it into the plant. I'll admit that. And it didn't kill the plant. And I do take my coffee grounds and use them not on my house plants, but I do throw those in the coffee pile, in the compost pile, because I know as it breaks down, that provides benefits. From what you're saying, I can't think of anything bad I don't know, maybe you've got a caffeine tolerance you got to consider with your plants.
The acid content on a cup of coffee shouldn't, well, it could be, it could be like 4.5.
Yeah, well, but I think he said he was diluting it.
If you're diluting it, yeah. Then you're
just
fine.
Using some grounds. I think you're fine. I wouldn't want to be pouring straight coffee in there every day. That might cause some problems.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, this could be a fun web search that we can do for the next show. I will say this, though, and this is my days as trying to grow plants as an undergrad. Beer does not work well for watering plants. And that's a story for another time.
Thanks. Very good, gentlemen. Well, thanks a lot.
Thanks, David. Thanks a lot for calling. No, I get you. I imagine you get all kinds of interesting things growing on the topsoil when you pour beer down them.
Well, let me tell you, the plants don't like it.
No, they don't.
I had this
alcohol.
Well, I had this mysterious. I went away for a weekend and I came back and my plants just were going downhill and nobody would fess up to what happened. And then all of a sudden they said, "Oh yeah, we poured beer on your plants."
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Karen in Kansasville. Hi to you.
Hi, very well, thank you. I'm calling because you had someone who was calling in with information, seeking information about carnivorous plants.
Yes.
And I know that at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater, they have a program where they have kids come in and grow carnivorous plants and set them up in little terrariums, and maybe she could use that resource.
Wow.
It's a good idea. So I bet if she goes to the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater website.
Yes.
And then write in carnivorous plants in the search.
And they have a nickname for the program. It's called College for Kids.
Oh,
but
College.
I don't know if it's an official name, but I know that's what we always called it.
Yeah, College for Kids is a program that UW-Madison has, I assume, and they call it College for Kids, I think.
Okay.
So probably all our UW campuses around the state have something similar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it makes good sense.
The people at Whitewater just do a really swell job with the kids.
Oh, there's a lot of great people at Whitewater. Well, that's for sure. Thanks, Karen.
You bet.
Appreciate the tip. And let's take some more calls. Ann in Cumberland, you are next. Hi, Ann.
Hi there. I have a question. I've been in my house about 20 years, and about 10 years ago, I lost a long-living peace lily. And ever since then, I haven't been able to get a peace lily to grow. Every new shoot that comes up black.
Ooh.
And the existing leaves start on the edge and just turn crunchy black. And I've tried about four different varieties. And this summer we had a couple of funerals and we got, you know, several peace lilies on the plants. And the same thing happened to the Dieterbachias and the palm. But my Hoya and my fern and my Schefflera seem to do fine. So I'm wondering if I have something airborne in my house or if I'm what's happening. Because I can grow them fine in the office.
Yeah, well, let's look at the problem that I talked about earlier seems to be for our houseplants, humidity. Do you have a humid house? And that's where I would start with.
No, I mean, it doesn't seem to be very humid.
Then, because they're indoors, they're going to be losing a lot of water through their leaves. You need to stay on top of watering so there's at least a moist soil base, so then maybe you get a little evaporation from there and the microclimate around them, a little extra humid. Or try consider putting in a humidifier in the area of the plants and see if that will, in the long run, improve the way the plants look.
But, you know, I lost a bunch of these in the summer when it was humid. I mean,
were you running your air conditioner, though?
No, not when I lost these because it was like, you know, well, probably four of them was in probably the month of August.
Mm-hmm. Well, then my next question would be is possibly, are you repotting them when you get them?
Not this time, no.
Okay, and did they die this time?
Yep, every time. I have not for 10 years been able to get a peace lily or a Dieterbachia or anything.
Boy, there could be some other problems there we need to troubleshoot. One of the things I think, because I don't think I can solve it here, contact your county extension office and work through your local agent or your master gardener there to maybe help troubleshoot some of the maybe soil issues you may be having. Maybe you do have a pest problem going on in your house that needs to be identified, or it may just be something oddball that we're just totally overlooking altogether.
If you can take, let's say you've got a plant and it starts to get black around the edges, the leaves, if you can take those leaves in.
If you're actually, the way I would do it is take the whole plant
in. Take the whole plant in?
Because if there's a leaf problem, it may be associated with the roots, a root rot that may be going on.
Oh.
And have that picked at by the master gardener or your county agent. Then if the other option is just take the whole plant and get it down to the plant disease and diagnostic lab. And have them pick through it. Because if it's something that you've been having trouble with for 10 years, you may have the source of some problem in your house that needs to be isolated that way.
Yeah, it'd be worth it. And you're kind of breaking up on us, so we have to move on, Ann. But thanks for calling. And do get a hold of your county extension office and talk to the master gardener or the horticulture agent that's there, and mm-hmm. they can probably help you out. But they probably will need to take a look at the plant.
Yeah, the whole plant probably.
The whole plant. Let's see. We got David in Owatonna. Is that correct, Minnesota?
Correct.
All right. How you doing?
Very good.
Thanks for calling.
I love your webcasting.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Where's Owatonna?
In Minnesota.
In Minnesota. Okay.
Oh. I have a question about an amaryllis. It started to send up two buds,
mm-hmm.
and then it just kind of stopped. And it's, you know, they're about halfway up, and they just don't seem to be doing anything.
Have you been fertilizing?
Yes, I have, originally.
Okay, what does that mean?
Well, it's been, you know, when I first planted them.
Okay, have you been giving it a liquid fertilizer, water-soluble fertilizer, as it's been growing?
No.
You might want to try that.
Okay.
And that just gives, you've got the base, if you've put fertilizer in there when you got it started. That's a good base it could draw from. But by giving it a little bit of water-soluble fertilizer each time you water, that just helps it along.
Okay. Is it a possibility that the top part is too tight, that the flowers are trying to come through, if you understand what I mean?
Yeah. As in the bud's not opening?
Yeah. It's not pushing through.
I'm going to say no. I'm not going to recommend a C-section for your amaryllis bulb.
Okay. Well, I'll try fertilizing.
Yes. Try a little fertilizer.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Dave.
Yeah, appreciate the call very much. And if you'd like to join in, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1290. 1-890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Let's open lines. We will get you on real fast. As we look at the coming year for flowers and so forth, are there some new varieties out there or varieties that you're recommending of any type of flowers for the coming year?
Well, of course there's new stuff out there. What they are, though, they're so too numerous. I don't know. I know I just did my big seed order. I do mostly vegetable gardening for mm-hmm. through work, and I've gone on, and my idea this year was I was doing all heirlooms. And honestly, I was so overwhelmed with our options out there that I sat down with a couple of master gardeners, and I think we put it up on the wall and threw darts, and so he said, that's what we're going to choose this year. But right now is a great time to be going through the catalogs, finding what strikes your fancy, try some new things. If you order stuff by seed, that's usually an affordable way to try some new things and do some experimenting in your garden. I know I experiment every year with something, both at work and at home. At home, I can get by with a lot more experimenting.
Then you get at work. Okay. Yeah. Well, let's go to Robin in Kenosha. Robin, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I live in an apartment, and I love the idea of houseplants.
Mm-hmm.
Right now I have a Christmas cactus that has been with me for 12 years
mm-hmm.
and has moved with me every single move I had, and I'm amazed that I haven't killed it yet. So there's a little bit of a brown thumb going on here, but my biggest problem is my light exposure. Right now I pretty much live in a cave,
mm-hmm.
And I only have west-facing windows and one north-facing window. And I would love to have lush green plants everywhere, but I just don't know which ones would be best for my two dilemmas of a brown thumb and that kind of lighting.
They make some really nice artificial ones these days.
It's hopeless, then.
No, it's not hopeless. It's not hopeless. You know, you need a really focus on plants that will grow in the light conditions you can offer. I found with the Christmas cacti, the more you ignore them, the happier they are.
Yeah, that's probably why it's surviving.
Things like philodendron and pothos will do fine almost in any situation. I actually have one growing in my basement window on an east-facing basement window where it's getting hardly any light at all, and I forget to water it for months on end, and it's still growing.
Okay.
So pothos would work well, too. Try some of that. The Sansevieria, or the other one they called mother-in-law's tongue,
okay,
is another one that I find that I could really abuse, and it does just fine.
Okay.
Things like ficus, though, in that, I don't think will be your cup of tea.
No, yeah. I had a ficus tree. It was not...
It was not happy, and it let you know what?
It gave it its best shot, I will say that, but it just couldn't compete. The other thing is I love ivy, and, you know, I was just wondering if, you know, I just like it, and I was just wondering how it would do, because my friends, I swear, every summer I'm chopping huge ivy-like things off their fences and everything, and I was like, should I take a cutting of this and see if I could get it to grow? It'd be doing well here.
If you're wanting something for indoors and ivy-like, you may want to be looking for hetera.
Okay.
And it'll be an ivy you can grow. Try it. You know, you can get it fairly cheaply. I wouldn't buy a huge plant of it. You can go to the garden centers and usually find it in a little 2-inch, 4-inch pot. Take that home, see how it grows for a while.
Okay.
And then if you're having success with it, then upgrade to a larger one, or maybe it'll grow to the point where you can expand it.
Okay, well, that sounds great. I thank you for your advice.
Well, good luck with it.
Okay, take care.
Yep, bye-bye. Thanks for calling. And Chris in Merrimack, we will turn to you next. Hi, Chris.
Hi there. How you doing?
Great. Thanks for calling.
I got a jade plant when I got a new position, and it's in my office. And it's just growing crazy, and it's kind of like you said, ignore it and it'll grow.
Mm-hmm.
But it recently, about 2 years ago, I repotted it in a global type pot, and now it's just ungainly big for the pot. And I'm wondering what I should do: put it in a different pot, but what kind of a pot?
Well, I've got a jade plant at home that I've been babysitting for a buddy of mine for about 3 years now. he's not getting it back. And it is quite large. But what I want to do, because I don't want to repot it, I want to keep it that size, is I prune it. As if you would be pruning a tree or a shrub. I come in and I head that thing back to the size that I want it to maintain. I cut back at laterals. One of these days I'm going to turn this into a class, you know, just for practice pruning trees using jade plants as an example. But I cut it back and to do heading back cuts, and I cut it back to the size that I want it, and so I don't have to repot it. But if you're wanting to, the recommendation is when you do repot a houseplant is you get one, you just get a pot one size larger and put it into that. Mm-hmm. So if you're wanting to do that.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Deb in Sturtevant, your turn. Hi, Deb.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And I'm with the perennial powdery mildew question.
Okay.
I've got my vegetable plots in the south side of my shed. It used to be really well, and now the last few years I've been getting powdery mildew real regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if it's because the trees in the neighbor's yards have grown up and made it more moisture.
It could be a couple things to address. Powdery mildew will be a leaf fungi that is pretty host specific, though you can get it on several different things at once. If it likes humid weather, so knowing that, what we want to do is create an environment that we're going to have plenty of sunlight and airflow moving through the garden, and that will minimize the amount of powdery mildew that you have. So you're saying the neighbor's trees might be affecting it. That could be acting as a wind block, or it could be causing too much shade to get into your garden. So cut down your neighbor's tree. I don't know if that's an option.
I'm cutting down one of them.
Okay. That might help by allowing in more light and reducing the amount of moisture that'll be on the leaves. What you might want to look to do locally in your garden. And was this a vegetable garden or an ornamental?
Vegetable.
Okay. Watch your watering practices. If you water in the evening if you water in the evening and the leaves stay moist all night long, that'll increase the opportunity of powdery mildew development, you want to water early in the morning so those leaves have the chance to dry out. The other thing you want to try is good sanitation in the garden. Get out any kind of infested debris and get rid of it or throw it on the compost pile and let it get it out of there, because otherwise that serves as a source of inoculum that will reinfect the plants the following year.
So, yeah, I usually pull everything out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, so I try to, you know, cut down the tree, and then when you water, water earlier in the day versus at night, if that's an option.
Yep. Thanks, Deb.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Appreciate the call. And some more open lines again at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Visiting with Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension horticulture educator and hort educator for the Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville, Wisconsin as well. So if you're in the Madison area, call us at 263-1890. Otherwise, again, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Clyde in Denmark next. Clyde, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Last spring, we were happened to be in Janesville when you had your heritage tomato sale.
Yeah.
And I kind of went overboard. I got about 30 different varieties. I was wondering if you're going to have that again this year, and also if it's possible for you when you plant them to do them in two packs instead of four packs, because it gets to be an awful lot of plants. But we had some really good varieties, and good luck with them. Also, I was wondering if you might do the same with unusual pepper varieties.
Why? It's just so happened you ask. Not only are we redoing it, but yesterday we had a meeting about to discuss selling them in single pots.
Good.
So, yes, we will be redoing that sale again. We'll be doing heirloom tomatoes, heirloom peppers, and heirloom eggplants. And we were having the discussion yesterday of, instead of four packs, repotting some of them and selling them in singles.
Okay.
So, and but I'd give you dates right now, but check our website because those dates are yet to be determined.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. And again, the website is rotarygardens.org. Rotarygardens.org. Get you right to the Rotary Botanical Garden in Janesville, Wisconsin. You can find out all the dates. Fred in Fort Atkinson, we'll get to you in just a minute. Our guest, Mike Maddox, of course, as I mentioned, Jim Packard, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking all things garden today with Mike Maddox. Give us a call if you have a question. Lots of people online now, so we'll go to Fred in Fort Atkinson. Fred, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Hey, got a question for you. I built a rain garden. You know, I'm a building inspector, so I calculated everything out to build a rain garden. But one thing I did not know is what plants will grow in my rain garden?
Depends on what type of rain garden you want. There's been a lot of research going on right now regarding the construction of rain gardens, and one of the big things that people have been kind of looking for then is, okay, what do I plant into it? And there has been some work published now regarding on what you can put into it, and the Wisconsin DNR does have some existing publications recommending plants.
I just signed it off their website.
I was going to say, yeah, it's there, and I think it also is cross-referenced via extension too. In general, what you're looking for are grass-like plants, and Forbes Prairie is really popular because of their deep root systems. But then depending on the type of rain garden you're building, if there's going to be any kind of water standing for long periods of time, you're going to need to find plants that are going to survive that. Those are going to be a lot of like marginal plants you would find in a pond. Or if it's going to be something that's going to drain quickly, and it depends on your soil type, you can get by more with those prairie-type plants.
Right. I designed it out so that it won't hold water for longer than 2 hours. It'll filter whatever water goes in after the rain event.
Yeah.
It filters out, and it's dry. Well, it's there's no standing water.
Okay.
Yeah. So you're going to be able to gravitate more towards just your basic prairie plants, and your selection there would depend on your light and soil types. Full sun, then you got the full spectrum of prairie plants you can choose from. I don't want to name any specific plants because they just might be wrong for you. But to look at sources, there are some local seed companies that offer plants throughout the state. Larry, you got something on the web?
Well, I just typed in the search engine, rain gardens in Wisconsin, and of course UW Extension and DNR both pop up, and there are quite a few references. Mm-hmm. And that's probably your best bet.
Yeah, and I don't really want to recommend one place over another for a business. I'm uncomfortable doing that.
Understandable.
But to go to these publications, I'm pretty sure in the back they do list all sources that are mm-hmm. known, and that'll probably give you more than what I could list.
Awesome. My wife wants flowers, so flowers she gets.
good luck with it. I know also too. There's been some. Oh boy. I wish I could remember the name. If you're listening and you know, let me know. There's been some demonstration gardens of rain gardens put in throughout the state. And so if you do know of any, bring them up, because I think to go and look at them is probably the best.
Excellent. Well, thanks for your help.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. I know there's one in Madison on Willie Street.
There's one in Madison, but I'm surprised at some of the places where they do have them. I'll just say in Southwest Wisconsin, I know there's a master gardener who did a display around one of the libraries there in which I think there was multiple tiers of different plant material.
Cool.
So
very cool.
Can't remember the exact place.
I know there are photos of the rain gardens off the DNR website from the Willie mm-hmm. Street co-op in Madison area there. Joe in West Bend, we turn to you next. Hi, Joe.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Great. Thanks for calling.
You haven't heard my question yet. seriously, do you know of any simple or practical way to propagate trilliums?
No.
Oh, okay. that's what I kind of thought. Well,
Not off the top of my head. For a specific plant like that, I would need one of my resources and... Or the web, which looks like Larry's popping some stuff up. Off the top of my head, I do not know propagation of trilliums, but I've got a book on my desk in the office that I can look up any plant, and it gives you all the recommended ways of doing it.
I've seen some things on the net and so on, and mm-hmm. at one point they had mentioned that it takes like 3 years if you're going to try to propagate them from seed, and I thought, boy, that's a long time.
Yeah, if you're trying to get a plant to get to the point where it's going to be mature, usually seed can be cheaper, but it's going to take longer.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at asexual ways and doing vegetative cuttings, it could be root cuttings and that. It'd be something to look up probably from like a Trillium Fanatic Society. They usually go to a plant society's group, and they usually list everything you need to know about the plant.
All right. Very good. Thank you much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling.
Wish I had a more exact answer.
Clarence in Hartford, your turn. Hi, Clarence.
This fall I had bought from a department store that sells shrubs and things, and they had some emerald green arborvitae mm-hmm. left that are about 4 to 5 feet high, and I got a really good deal. Well, I got $25 a piece because they were like half brown, and I I took them home to take my chance because they look so good and I like them, and I planted them, and they're just hanging on doing good. Is there something I can do to bring them back, or is it a lost cause?
Not necessarily. You're probably the biggest thing you can do is make sure they stay well watered.
Okay.
You keep them well watered, and hopefully you watered them up through the fall so they were really well hydrated. And if they're going to do anything, they're going to grow out of it. And about all you can do is water.
See, what I did, I stick like a pry bar into the ground. I even did that 2 weeks ago. And put a little mixture of muriel acid and put it down in there. They said that was good. Is that doing any good?
Right now, it wouldn't be doing much of anything, but it could be there as a source of nutrients for the plants in the spring. Personally, though, I like just to see you water them.
Oh, just water. Okay.
Well, you know, it's my keep it simple principle. Just give it 1 inch of water per week. And that should, you know, if Mother Nature doesn't bring rain, you come in with the garden hose and you make up the difference.
Okay. Now in winter, though, are they dormant kind of, or does it?
They are dormant. For the most part, because they're evergreen, the problem will be is if we have a really sunny day, they might start losing moisture through their needles, through their scales, but they're not going to be able to bring any up from the roots. And so you might find some extra browning in the spring because of that, because those leaves have just dried out. So that's why if you water them really well in the fall, that helps with that situation.
Do I need to like wrap them, protect them from the wind?
That could be another option for you, is get some burlap, and you don't want to put the burlap right on them, but you just want to make a screen on the side that the wind will be coming from.
Okay.
And that'll help.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And I know some people who have brought their arborvitaes inside.
Yeah.
Keeping them for the over the winter. They were in pots.
Yep.
and seem to be doing just fine.
Yeah, to bring them indoors, you still want them to go dormant, or did they, or are they not letting them go dormant?
No.
Oh, wow. Again, that falls into my too much work category for me.
Okay. Lynn in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Lynn.
Hello, good morning.
Morning.
I have a lot of luck with my plants outdoors, but when it comes to indoors, not so much. And I have very low light, mostly northern exposure. Do you have any suggestions for plants that do well there and some that have, you know, some interest, variegated leaves or, you know, some different colors?
Well, in my northern window, and I'm kind of falling to your same boat. I do well outside. My houseplants are severely abused and ignored indoors, and it's been survival of the fittest. In my house, I have the Sansevieria, which is the mother-in-law's tongue, and it can come as variegated or not. I have a grape ivy, which has been handed down for so long, and I don't think you can kill these things.
And they handle low light pretty well.
Yeah, they do really well, and they do tolerate being ignored. I actually have a jade plant that does really well, though I do try to give it a little bit more light than the rest. Oh, boy, what else? I'm mentally going around my living room here. Chinese evergreen. That would be one. We see it all the time, but you never really know what it's called. Look, find yourself a Chinese evergreen, and that is another one I have really good luck with. And again, I could ignore it, and it does fine.
Okay.
Those are some of the ones that, you know, that I have success with in my house.
Great. So,
thanks. Right.
Good
Thank
luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Lynn. Thanks for calling. And you can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. We have some open lines. We'll get you on. Steve in Libertyville, Illinois. Your turn now. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thanks for calling.
My wife's a biology teacher, and she's having a tough time accepting that she can't make this thing grow. She has a gardenia. We've got this gardenia that lives inside, and for the last probably 4 or 5 years old, and the last 4 or 5 years, it's been given twice a year. It puts out these beautiful flowers, and they smell great, but the last 6 months, it just doesn't look too good, and I don't know. She cut it way back. I don't know if we need to repot it into a bigger pot or what. But
right now, what I want to see you do is just keep it alive to the spring. To do anything to a houseplant like right now, because it is such a low light situation, it's growing so slowly, it's not going to recover from anything you do to it. What I would do for now is just keep it in a situation where it's going to stay alive. Give it light, give it water when it's needed. And then when our days start to get longer in the spring, start giving it the fertilizer it needs, consider repotting it at the time, and then see how it recovers.
Okay.
A lot of the things, and we've got this gardenia at the gardens that was given to us. It's 25 years old. It's a small tree. And every winter it takes a turn for the worse as the light situation changes. But then in the spring, it revives itself when we start watering it, giving fertilizer, and we actually then move it outside.
Yeah. Well, that's what she does, too, in the summer. She takes it out and lets it get real rainwater. All right.
Yep.
And the other thing is, I read somewhere, because you were talking about the beer before, if you take beer, and I think soda pop that's got sugar, not diet, and spray it on your yard, it will help with the thatch problem, that the enzymes in the beer will break down the thatch. You ever heard of that?
I have not heard of that, but I have heard of some things with beer and slugs. But No, I have not heard anything regarding beer and thatch.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks for calling. You'd probably have to dump a lot of beer on.
There's better uses of beer. just one comment based because everybody's been talking about their houseplants. If you take something from indoors to out every year, expect it to fluctuate. It's going to be growing outdoors in one set of conditions. When you move it indoors, that'll be another set of conditions it has to adapt to. So it may be to you taking a turn for the worse. It's just going to adapt to your indoors. And then when you move it back out in the spring and start giving it the real sunlight, direct sunlight, fertilizer, water, warm temperatures, it'll probably snap back up.
And Sandy in Wausau, it's your turn next. Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. Thank you. I'm wondering about watering houseplants with softened water.
Oh, yes. There can be an issue with that. because of the, if you're using your water softener, that can have an effect on the health of the plants. Typically what I've heard people recommend is just don't use it straight out of the tap. Let it sit for 24 hours.
Oh, okay.
That's one thing I've heard.
Well, now, if you've got a cold water and hot water, you know, we have our softener hooked up to the hot water and not to the cold.
That was the other thing I was...
No, it's hooked up to the whole house.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
There is stuff out there for information on the web, but yeah, you want to try to avoid using softened water.
Okay, that's probably why my ficus plant turned totally white.
Could be.
Ooh.
It turned totally white. All the leaves fell off of it, and I put it outside for dead. And one day I was looking at it, and I thought, I can't give this thing up. And I went to snip off one of the big long branches to use it as a spike for my other plants. And I cut into it, and this milky stuff started coming out of it. And I thought, it's alive.
Now, keep in mind.
So I left it. I left it there, and it's totally green now again.
Yep. Ficus is finicky.
But it had no leaves.
Ficus is finicky, though. You can look at the thing cross-eyed, and it'll lose all its leaves.
True.
You want to leave a ficus in one place the best as you can. Mm-hmm. And again, as days get longer and days get shorter, it will lose leaves.
Yeah, it is starting to now. But
so,
it's totally green again, and after all the leaves fell off, the leaves turned white. It was incredible. I couldn't believe it. It's like, oh, my God.
That happened to some tomato plants that I was going to transplant one year. And it was I set them out a little bit early, and the next morning they were all white. Well, lots of things can happen, and they often will. And we'll talk some more with our guest, Mike Maddox, coming up here. He'll be with us till 12:30 today on the Ideas Net. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Mike Maddox. Glad to have you listening in. Certainly join us if you have some questions or comments for Mike. Maybe something to add. Someone called in, as a matter of fact. I want to go back to the rain gardens issue for just a minute, because I had a caller from Fort Atkinson call in, Fred. And Fred, I hope you're still listening, because someone reminded us that there's a rain garden at the UW Extension Office, the county Extension Office in Jefferson. Yep. And it's a pretty nice one, too.
As soon as that was called in, I'm like, you know, I knew that. I've seen it. Yeah, and it just didn't come to my mind. But yeah, there is a fairly large one there at the Extension Office.
And you can probably find more information right at the office, too.
Yes, most definitely.
All right. Let's go to Laura in Jackson next. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
What I was calling about was I have a very large perennial garden. And interspersed in between all my perennials, I have probably 1,000-plus bulbs.
Okay.
And the problem I have every spring is I can't dig down. They always recommend to dig down about 6 inches and turn your soil over and then add your fertilizer. Well, I can't do that because of all the bulbs I have. So what do you suggest I do?
Just top dress.
Just top dress.
Yeah, you don't need to work it in. We, at the gardens, just top dress with slow-release fertilizer every year. A lot of times it's just Milorganite. And then we use, put on about 1 or 2 inches of an organic matter soil amendment, and we just top dress it.
Okay.
And it's a lot easier to do it that way.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, your flowers look pretty good, too.
I can't wait for spring to come.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much. You have a great day.
Thanks, Laura. You too. Yeah, the rotary guards. You guys did some great job with bulbs.
And the secret is, you know, for all the flower displays is we use a lot of soil amendments. We personally use mushroom compost, but just whatever you can get as a soil amendment, compost, manure, whatever, use that on an annual basis, and that's the secret.
How do you get mushroom compost?
We grow a lot of mushrooms. No, we order it from a supply company, and we have it delivered by
the ton.
Yeah, the ton.
Okay. Diane in Sturgeon Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Diane.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Well, I've got a first-year greenhouse. It's a little one, and it's a cold greenhouse. Its temperatures go from about 40 to 55, and then if there's sun, of course, it gets warmer. But I brought in from the garden some tomato plants just because they were there and they still had some tomatoes on. So I did harvest those tomatoes and also have some peppers. But is there any point, they probably will live just till spring, and I also have some broccoli.
Is there any point in wintering them over, thinking that maybe in spring they might start growing again?
Well, based on the greenhouse you have, I think you might have some better luck with the broccoli than with the peppers and tomatoes. Those are definitely warm season plants,
right.
And they don't like their temperatures getting, pretty much below 60 degrees. They like it warm. If you can keep some heat in that greenhouse, you might have better luck. But otherwise, it just sounds like it's getting too cold. You could probably, if it's getting down to those temperatures, try experimenting growing cool season crops all year long. Get your spinach going, some radish and peas. You could probably be doing that kind of growing in that. But then just save your resources to just buy fresh tomatoes and peppers each year.
Yeah, it doesn't. In other words, in the spring, would these plants rejuvenate and start producing or no?
They might. Your peppers might do it. Because I know some peppers can be perennials. I think even some tomatoes can be. Tomatoes can be perennials.
Yeah.
But it's my big concern right now is having you just getting them to survive to the spring.
Yeah.
We were at Disney World in early January, and we're at Epcot, and there's an exhibit called The Land there that takes you through four of their greenhouses, and they have a tomato tree essentially, and it's the vines in that are suspended in the air, and they have something like 24,000 tomatoes they've harvested off that one plant.
Well, and also too, I think if you look over at European sources, they will grow tomatoes indoors year round, but they're using indeterminate ones that'll be growing all year long, and they're doing that under glass house or under hoop house and that. So it can be done, but based on what you said with your current greenhouse, you'd be lucky to get them to survive, I would think.
Yeah. I just wondered if I ought to toss them out. I mean, I have some that are on the porch where it's a little warmer. It's only down to 50 in there. But the leaves are kind of wilted down, and I'm just wondering whether I should toss them.
No, just give it a shot. Try it. They probably won't look pretty. They probably won't look very pretty. You don't want them to be a focal point in your house. But see if you can get them to survive and then move them out when the temperatures are warmer and see what happens. And if you may not ever do it again, but at least you can say, I did it once.
Yeah, you could try it. There's one other thing. I have I've got some peas germinating, and I had a sprout come up, about an inch or so, and also some tarragon. And then something came along and is nibbling on the leaves, and I can see the little bits of leaves all around the plant or around this little sprout. And do you have any idea what it is or what I should
do? Is this indoors or out?
In the greenhouse.
In the greenhouse. Mice would be the first thing that come to mind.
Mice. I have a mouse. I know that.
I would get a mouse trap.
Mouse trap.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, it wouldn't be an insect then.
Not if your greenhouse is getting that cold. No, mouse.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Good luck.
You don't want to get rid of that mouse, do you, Diane?
Well, I'm going to get one of those live traps, I think.
But I tell you what, then where are you going to put the mouse?
Well, outside, and she can fend for herself.
Okay. So you want that mouse to freeze to death.
I'll make a hole for him.
All right. Thanks, Diane.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Wendy in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Wendy.
Hi. I've got a couple of different questions. First of all, I forgot to plant some of my bulbs. They've been in the garage, and I'm wondering if I can, put those in a pot and force them in the house, or if I can put them outside in a pot on my porch.
Are they still hard?
Yeah.
Yes, you can do that. you can try forcing them. A lot of good information out there on how to force bulbs. There might be an issue on whether or not if you kept them cool enough so they'd be able to germinate or, grow. Or you can try just putting them in containers and then putting them out the spring. They may grow. You may not get flowers from them, but you could then probably just save them for the following year and plant them in the ground and hopefully get flowers from them that way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Another question. I have an African violet that the leaves are normal, the old leaves, but the new growth, these little tiny miniature leaves, like stunted midget growth, and mm-hmm. I don't know what the heck is going on with that.
I've seen that come across as a couple things. It could be a disease issue or a small mite issue that will probably need to be investigated to see what it actually is. My recommendation for right now is if have that investigated, take it to your county extension office to have somebody look at it more closely to rule either out a disease or an insect pest. The other thing I would do is take off some of those larger healthy leaves and start trying to propagate it.
Okay, or maybe I'll just throw it away.
Or you can just throw it away and start all over. Yes, that is another option.
Thank you very much, and I want to say hi to Dennis.
Dennis, well...
Hello, Dennis.
Dennis is out there listening.
Dennis, hi. Hi from Wendy. Dennis. Thanks for calling, Wendy. Appreciate it. Kelly in Middleton, your turn. Hi, Kelly.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about a bat plant.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a picture of one, and I got wild to do one, so I ordered some seeds, but then the information on the seeds says it takes 9 months for them to germinate.
Yeah.
Would I be a lot better off trying to get roots or something, if I can find roots for it instead of seeds?
No. It's six of one, half dozen of another. You've got the seeds, if you do. I would go ahead and just try to start them. And see how much luck you have with that.
Okay.
And if you find out you don't, then try doing some other methods. Seeds, you know, just be patient. Follow the instructions and see what results. The other option is you can just go buy a bat plant.
Oh, they have these things locally in greenhouses?
I have seen them for sale at area greenhouses. Yes. And they're very interesting to see.
I'll bet. Yeah. How long do they take? I wonder, how long does the bloom last? Is it sort of like an orchid? Once it blooms, it lasts a long time?
I did not look at that information to know, but they were, even if they lasted a week, I think they'd be worth it just for that long.
Probably.
They were that interesting, yes.
Okay. Well, thanks very much. I appreciate you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Sarah in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, guys.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a problem with these little black bugs in the soil in my houseplants,
mm-hmm.
and I have lots of different houseplants. I don't even know the names of them, but I'm obsessed with filling my house with plants. And these little bugs are in the soil, and I don't know how to get rid of them.
You'll probably need to find an insecticide labeled for indoor use at your local garden center. It could be fungal gnats, any number of things.
Aphids?
It could
be a lot of things.
We're diagnosing it over the radio. I have no clue. Again, we need to get it identified. So take it to your local garden center or to your extension office. Get it identified. You may want
to... I don't know how to... How do I catch them? Do I have to catch a live one? Because I squish
bring
all the time, and that doesn't help.
Take the plant, put it... If you can, take the plant, put it into a bag, and bring the whole plant in. Because if it's something in the soil, we can poke around at it and see what flies up and identify it there. And then based on what those results are, then do the appropriate treatment. It may be transplanting the plant to get fresh soil because it could be eggs in the soil that they're occurring from. Or you may, they do make, I've seen it out there, insecticidal sticks that you can shove into your soil. Or they even make soilless mixes with an insecticide put into it. You've got options out there. Yeah.
That'd be great.
Identification is key first, though.
Okay, because they're everywhere, and I don't know where to start.
Yeah.
So, all right, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Good place to start whenever you're overwhelmed like that is just get the problem identified, and then we can work up a plan on taking care of it from that
extension,
point.
County Extension, our master gardeners, go to a local garden center or something.
Yes.
Although I'm not sure the garden centers want you bringing in
good point.
Plants with diseases on it, but certainly the extension officer.
You would see
to
some
it.
Of the things that appear on my desk. Wow.
Okay. And go to the Garden Expo, too. That's
just don't bring that plant there.
Don't bring the plant there. But that's February 9th, 10th, 11th. And 11th. And you can get tickets online, by the way. excuse me, at Wisconsin Public Television or the Janesville Botanical?
We've got them for sale there. If you come in through the staff entrance, we have them available.
They're available.
They're everywhere.
Everywhere. Green Bay Botanical Garden, yeah. All of the garden centers, Jung's and Johansson's, and all of them have them. Tickets are $6 in advance, $7 at the door, $10 for a two-day ticket, which is a pretty good deal. And just purchase them online, or even an 800 number. I think it's 800-253-1158. 800-253-1158.
You know, one of the best things about that show, too, is if you do have plant questions, you are in an auditorium filled with people with answers. You can go from booth to booth to booth with your plant questions and find the answers. I know I'll be there both Friday and Sunday, probably Saturday.
I'll be there Saturday for sure. I think we're on at 11 o'clock and in the morning for our hour session with Shelley and Lisa and I. So it'll be fun. Let's go to another phone call. And Rod in Weyerhaeuser, I think, is next. Rod, hi.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes,
I can.
Okay. Yeah, I stepped outside. The wind's blowing. Anyhow, the lady that called before the news break on wondering about watering her indoor plants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just from observation, I save minnows, you know, like for fishing and for the house cat. He loves to catch them. Yeah. Anyhow, we got 7 parts iron in our well, and if I put that conditioned water in that cooler, it's a 48-50-quart cooler, the minnows are about 4 or 5 days they'll last.
Yeah.
And if I put the iron water in there, it's like all you got to do is once in a while just kind of churn it for the oxidization, but it seems like they last forever. So if plants are affected the same as fish are,
well,
I don't know.
You know, one of the questions that we should have followed up with that individual was what was the source of her water? I usually make the assumption it's a tap water, you know, city source, but there could be an issue with a well or some sort of alternative source or something locally with their water.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to mention if she's still listening because depending on the plumbing, too, if she's got a well, if they have a well, it's if it's direct to the outside faucet, you know, so that it ain't conditioned and take it right out from the outside.
Yeah.
But that's just a suggestion.
Yeah. Thanks, Rod.
You betcha. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. And Brandy in Lake Mills is next. Hi, Brandy.
Hi. Good afternoon. I'm calling with a comment. It actually goes in line with the last caller and the water suggestions. We live in the city, and to conserve water, we have rain barrels. And I was just going to encourage more people to have rain barrels because we've been finding it to be a really nice way to grow our plants and also a satisfying thing that we're conserving water. Thank you.
Excellent idea.
Yeah, actually, that's the Rain Barrel Project is one of the things that the Rock Prairie Master Gardener Association has taken on is building rain barrels, and they're doing it as a bit of a fundraiser. I'm afraid to announce that because we're not geared up to be selling them right away, but they've taken on for a local community service project. And
they're kind of covered, too, aren't they? And
these are not just barrels that are catching water. There's a screen installed at the top to sift out any debris that would be coming in through your gutters, like seeds, leaves, and that, and to keep insects out. There's a tap at the bottom so you can easily get the water out of the barrel, so for use in your garden. And actually the ones that I have at home that we've made, you can hook a hose up to it and it's gravity fed out into the yard. And then what's really nice to consider when you're building your own rain barrel is an overflow tap. So if that barrel fills, it gets to the top, you can then direct that water with a hose either into another barrel or into the garden where you need it.
Yeah, good points. Cole in Clinton, I believe, is next. Or Chilton, excuse me. Cole, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to mention the rain garden that we have up here at Ledgeview.
Oh, at Chilton. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, it's it just got opened up, like commemorated this last fall at the Fall Food Festival. And it's small, but it's nice for the area. Mm-hmm. And it's on the north side of the main building, and it's mostly emulating prairie.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, I've just been walking in front of my plant display here, and for the lady that mentioned what to grow in poor light situations, I noticed my spider plants just thrive when I neglect them. And when you set them on a stool and you let them cascade down or something, it looks very nice.
Yeah, they're very pretty. And so that's at Ledgeview Park?
Yes.
The rain garden.
Yes, it's one of the parks with the big towers in it.
Yep, got it. Thanks, Cole.
Yep.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And let's see, who have we got next? We got Jackie in Milwaukee next. Hi, Jackie.
Good morning. Good morning, Larry. Some years ago, I got streptocarpus from a floral place indoor. Mm-hmm. Not the kind you grow outside. They're hybrids. And I haven't been able to find them. I found them to be so much better than African violets. You practically couldn't kill them, but apparently I did because I was ignoring them for quite a while. Has the man ever heard about an indoor streptocarpus?
No, I have not, but that does not mean such a thing doesn't exist.
Well, there's a place that they call Linden Lyons Greenhouse in New York, and they said, and what I had, mine grew with great big leaves and beautiful flowers that were up, you know, mm-hmm. up above, like on long stems. And like I said, it was very hard to kill them, but things happened here, and you've never heard of them.
Not for indoors. No, I have not. Then yeah. again, I'm not a big, you know, my house plants are the survival of the fittest.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, is there some place that you think I might call or whatever?
My recommendation is always turn to the web.
I don't have a computer, dear.
Find someone at the library to punch it in for you then.
Oh.
Because they can do those searches. So go to your local library, and I have found there is pretty much a plant group for everything out there
mm-hmm.
and where you can get the information you need. So to type in the streptocarcus, you probably find the streptocarcus.
Oh, they're absolutely gorgeous. If people yep. have not tried it, I think they should search like I'm going
to
do.
Yeah, go to your library if you don't have computer access, and they'll be able to assist you, and you'd be amazed what your resources will be out there. But filter through them so you find the appropriate ones.
All right, thanks for calling. Appreciate the call, Jackie. And, you know, here we've almost gotten through the show, and I almost forgot to ask you the one big question, which relates to honeysuckle. Did we talk about that yet?
No. Are you talking the honey locust question?
Our honey locust, not honeysuckle. Yeah. Honey locust. Someone asked whether or not, and this has come up a couple times.
Twice.
Honey locust. Is honey locust edible?
And I did not know, so I made up answers like I normally do. No. Yes, honey locust is edible, but we're not talking about the one that grows here natively. The one that grows here natively is the Gladitzia tricanthus, and that's the one we see on all our streets and that. And that's not the edible one.
Okay.
The confusion comes with common names because there's another plant out there called the honey locust. It originates from the Mediterranean, and I'm going to butcher this scientific name, but Serotonia siliqua, also known as a carob tree, is the one in which it can be a chocolate substitute. Now, the source of that, I will give it. Thank you to Ed Glover over at the Mercado Labs for sending that information in. So
we've got it. So not the kind you see in the streets.
No, not around here. But it is the common name is a honey locust that from elsewhere.
Barb in Delafield, hi to you.
Hi. Actually, I'll make this real quick. I have three questions.
Uh-oh.
The first one regards water. I have a well with a reverse osmosis system and a softener. So the reverse osmosis system is where I've been taking the water from, and I know there's no minerals in that. Is there anything I can do to help that? Or I'd like to run a line from down in the basement, but up to this point I haven't. I have to get a plumber in here.
No.
I would say stick with conversing with the plumber on that one. Because off the top of my head with the amount of time we have, I do not have an answer.
Okay. The next one is I have a calla lily that I got some bulbs last year from a friend, and mm-hmm. then she told me, they all rotted. So I just left them in a pile, and, yeah, they were all rotten. And all of a sudden I looked down, and here's one with a bump on it in the fall. So I brought it in, and lo and behold, I have a calla lily inside.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about 3 feet tall, but I'm wondering, will it flower, and do I need to do anything special to that?
Right now, just keep doing what you're doing to get it to survive and then try to move it. Try to keep it just well fertilized. What you're going to have to do is just have this plant take its natural course. It's coming from a pit, and it's working its way up because of the background it has with the rot and that. So,
and Barb, you got 2 out of 3, and that isn't bad. We're out of time. Thank you very much, Barb, and thank you, Mike, for being with us today. Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension horticulture educator and educator at the Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville. Go to their website at rotarygardens.com. www.thegreenhouse.org. And thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.